all the doctor, lawyer, cop shows, the most important thing about booking all those shows is don't fucking do anything. Just don't do anything.
I'm Lee Foster. You're listening to Action, the no bullshit podcast dedicated to the pursuit of acting excellence. Enjoy this episode.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, dude. All right, now I can be hands-free and, you know, in case I need to, like, do some karate chopping or anything.
Yeah, you never know. I almost got karate chopped by a homeless man outside of a church yesterday.
Really?
Yeah. He was karate chopping everything that moved.
Wow.
Took a hard, violent swipe at me.
No shit, really?
Yeah, but I dodged it.
Did you do, like, an awesome, like, dive roll or something?
I just kind of jumped up and I would just went, all right, bro. Like, what else do you say to that? I was like,
that's a classic, like, diffuse the fight, like, classic move. All right, bro. All right. Yeah, we don't have to do this.
Dude.
Are you recording? Because this is gold, what we just did.
Yeah, I am recording. That'll be a great intro. So, dude, thanks for coming back on, man. I haven't talked to you since January of 2016.
My God, that's insane. I can't believe that was that long ago.
That constantly happens to me where I don't know, it doesn't seem like it was that long ago. But
no, it feels impossible.
But it's true. So, man, I got a bunch of stuff I want to talk to you about.
Let's do it.
I kind of want to talk a lot about auditioning on this one.
Sure.
We didn't talk about that too much last time.
Does it bother you if I sit back like this?
No, I think it sounds great. Get comfortable.
Yeah, I want to get cozy so I can, you know, I want to be open to, you know, talk freely.
Yeah, no, it sounds perfect. So, dude, I just got to start by saying that I watched The History of Future Folk yesterday.
I love it. That's great.
And I was on a commercial set, and so I was watching it, and I was, like, laughing so hard that it was, like, at times it was, like, very inappropriate. I was like, I had to pause it a few times because I was like trying not to just laugh because everyone's
right.
Like, who's this fool like sitting here just cackling?
Right.
Here.
People are like, wow, this commercial shoot's going really well. That guy thinks it's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, dude, that was a really awesome movie.
Oh, thanks, man. It had like, it was totally the little indie movie that could, and it just had this sort of incredible life that nobody quite saw coming. It was really nice.
Last time we talked, it was on Netflix, and it's no longer on Netflix, right?
Mm-hmm.
So right. Why is that?
Just because they change their programming every however often, right? So it was on Netflix, I think, for 5 years or something. I don't know. I'd have to look it up. And, you know, that we got on Netflix at all was amazing and really helped the movie out. And then when the first round of it sort of, you know, it's contracted for a particular duration, of course. And then when the first round of that came to an end, we were excited because they wanted to re-up it. So it was on there for two cycles, I guess you could say. Yeah, it just kind of ran its course on old Netflix. We had a hell of a run.
Yeah, and now you guys are on, like, Amazon and
yeah, we're on Prime and iTunes, Apple, meow, meow.
Dude.
It's wild. That movie, the band pre-existed the film. Did we talk about that last time at all or no?
Yeah. We talked about it a little bit, but go ahead. Talk about Future Folk.
Just that, you know, to relate it to this podcast, being about acting and all that, the biz, just to emphasize how absolutely important it is to make your own thing. It's unhealthy for your emotional life and for your career even to sit around waiting for somebody else to give you a job. So you got to get after it and make your own damn thing, which was at the very beginning of Future Folk's life, not even the point. We, Nils and I, were just sort of goofing around. I was listening to a lot of Bowie at that point, and I wanted to make my own sort of space acoustic album story thing. And I had a couple of songs, and I took them to Nils, and then it sort of just morphed into this weird space alien folk duo.
Yeah.
And we were playing for, I don't know, almost a decade before that movie got made. And it was always just a sort of for funsies side project. You know, we'd play like all the, you know, bars and little venues downtown and in Brooklyn and Then one day our some good buddies of ours who were filmmakers said, dudes, we want to make a movie about future folk. And of course, our jaws hit the floor and we were super excited. And next thing you know, they wrote it and produced and directed it. And Nils and I, of course, had a, creative input, but it was amazing. It was a real family affair because they were good friends of ours. And we knew, half the crew, and we shot a lot of it like in one of our buddies' houses in Brooklyn. And so it was a real kind of family production, a lot of heart. And I like to think that came through in the film. A lot of heart in there, man. A lot of feelings.
Are you guys still playing?
It's been a minute. And it actually, and it's always sort of been like that. We'll take off, a year more, while we get busy doing other stuff. And last year, like Nils started his own company and I was doing this Broadway show. And so actually just had dinner with him last night and we were talking about sort of taking it in a different direction now. Because we have this really lovely sort of oddly dedicated fan base that's still very, active on our page and that kind of thing. So we're sort of talking about what the next step might be. And we might, I'm not going to give away any spoilers just yet. Because we're still figuring it out too. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of one of those things that always keeps coming back around. So,
all right. So we should probably introduce you to my audience in case they didn't hear the first one. But
let's do it.
Jay Kleitz, Kleitz, actor in New York, has been on Broadway, on television, in multiple things, accomplished. Commercial actor, is the voice of Lester Crest in Grand Theft Auto. part of the band Future Folk. That's it. That's all you are.
that's me in a nutshell. There's nothing beyond that.
Right.
I am only my credits.
That's right.
Get used to it if you want to be an actor.
That's right. So what was this Broadway show?
The Broadway show was called Getting the Band Back Together. And it was a really incredible process. We'd been working on it for years. I was involved in writing it. The head producer had this seed of the idea, which was that dude who's 40 years old loses his job, at the stock market, big money business thing, ends up having to move in with his mom in Jersey, gets the old boys back together and gets in a fight with the town bully. And, they settle it at the Battle of the Bands, right? And so it was a very, purposely silly, light, fun, rock and rolly, musical comedy. And it was a hell of a lot of fun. We did it probably, 4 or 5 years ago. We did it in Jersey at the George Street Theater. And it went really well. We got great review from the Times, and the audiences very consistently totally loved it. I got to do this amazing song called Bart's Confession. My character, by the way, was named after one of my best friends from high school, who's still one of my best friends. That was pretty fun to be able to immortalize. I give him a lot of shit about, like, dude, I immortalized your name on Broadway, so you can help me get the next round of beers. it went really well, and then nothing happened for a while. And just when I had sort of forgotten about it and let go, the producer, I guess, was able to secure us a Broadway theater. And next thing you know, we did straight like from a sort of a just rough read through into a lab where we were kind of developing it some more. And then we went straight into rehearsal, straight to the theater, hit Broadway. It was super fun. It was incredibly dumb in the most beautiful way. And then it got murdered in the papers and died a month later.
Really?
Yeah, totally, man. Got just hammered.
Why?
I think there's a few things that could explain why. So I think in part amongst theater critics particularly, there is a culture of cruelty that's developed over the last however many years because they need to stay relevant and they want people to watch the car wreck because everybody will, right? So... there's been a number of reviews, like the King Kong review, the Jimmy Buffett show review, our review, that were really, truly mean-spirited. And, it used to be that the Times and, like, maybe, Village Voice, when that existed, still were the only places to find out about theater and, like, what could shows go. Now, every Tom, Dick, and Harry has a blog about it, and there's 8,000. I mean, there's literally, you know, an infinite number of ways to hear or find out about a show. So I think they're trying to stay relevant, and I think it's kind of unprofessional. Even if a show is shit, and it might be shit, right? There's still a intelligent, respectful, academic way to go about saying this doesn't work, and here's why. And I don't think that's what they're doing. I probably shouldn't have said that out loud on this podcast, but fuck them, frankly. You could put that in there.
I will.
You know, I just think it's like they're trying to stay interesting, and people want to read that. So I think it wasn't, you know, it was also very purposely a silly, light. I mean, it was total cotton candy, right? And it was meant to be. It was just lovely, beautiful distraction. I think part of the response was that they didn't want such lightness on the precious Great White Way. You know, they wanted everything typically to be either, you know, very groundbreaking or very meaningful in some sort of socially impactful way, you know. And this was fluff.
Right.
Yeah. Fluff is okay. Fluff's actually very important, I think, especially these days. Uh-huh. For God's sake, we could all use it. So it's a shame, I think, that happened. I also want to, you know, be upfront and say that there were mistakes made. You know, I think there was a curtain speech prior to the show, and it was emphasized that this was an original show and not based on an existing film or book or Disney property or whatever else. And that was true. But a lot of the reviews responded very negatively to that, particularly, which I get to a degree. I think it was taken out of context a bit, right? Like, no, it was not an original show in terms of the, like, no, that, yes, of course, we've seen a Battle of the Bands movie before, right? We've seen that story. We've not seen this particular show on Broadway. I don't think we've seen that. But it wasn't meant to be some groundbreaking, new, earth-shattering piece of art. It was meant to be fun, and just fun. It was a mistake to, I think, emphasize that. And, you know, ticket sales also just, it's brutal. I mean, that anybody ever puts a Broadway show up is nothing short of a miracle. It's incredibly, incredibly hard to make that happen. And we were able to do it. And a lot of people really, really fucking loved that show. I mean, people were dying. Like, you know, my big song was about sleeping with my best friend's mom. And, like, it was hilarious and so, like, inappropriate. One of those moments where you're like, oh, my God, I can't believe somebody's saying that kind of thing on Broadway. Isn't that irreverent and fun? Yay, you know. But they wouldn't have it, and it wasn't a, you know, Disney property or, you know, laced with celebrities. So it died a short death, I guess. But that's the biz, baby. It's not the first time that's happened to me or to Broadway show in general.
Right. Let's keep this, like, macabre thing going.
Yeah. Let's get fucking depressed, Lee. Let's break it down.
All right. So here.
This business is going to eat you alive.
Yeah. Get out. Get out while you can. Everyone listening, get out while you can.
Run, you fools.
Have you ever been in a pilot that did not get picked up?
No, I have not. I've tested for a pilot. I've been like a guest star in the beginnings of shows. But no, I've not actually been on one that as a series regular that didn't get picked up. That happens. I mean, it's the same thing as the you know, getting the band back together. You know, you make this amazing thing and you get there and nothing's final until it is, you know.
You know, this is an important lesson for everyone listening. People talk a lot about the fact that you have to face a lot of rejection in this industry. And I think that when people are coming up, they think that what you're talking about when you say that is the fact that you go to auditions and you don't get it. And you do that over and over and over and over and over again.
Sure.
But really, like, that's pretty easy to stomach.
Yeah, totally. That's part of it. Right. Yes, that day-to-day rejection. But you're right, the bigger, sort of heartier, more hurtful rejections are when you think you've, like, really finally gotten there and the rug gets pulled out from under you. Oh, my God, we're on Broadway. Oh, my God, we just shot a TV show. Oh, my God, we made this movie, and then nothing fucking happened.
Right. And
happens all the time.
For
sure. It's actually more common than not.
Absolutely it is. And that's something that I learned because I had never booked I'd never booked any role on any pilot, and I booked a guest star on a pilot, and
nice.
And I was talking to, you know, I was in the makeup room and whatever. I was talking to the series regulars that were sitting next to me and stuff. And I was remember particularly talking to this one actress, and she was saying she had done something years and years ago. She'd had maybe a series regular on something years ago, and then it was just crickets. It was like 7 or 8 years later that she got this series regular. And then when it came out that it wasn't going to be picked up, I was like, damn, man, like that would have been cool. Like I would have gotten more money, and there's a possibility it could have been a recurring character. And I'll never get to use that footage. I'll never get to even see that footage, which is, you know, that sucks. But I was thinking about her, and I was like, fuck.
Yeah, dude.
That's the difference between hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh, yeah, easily. I mean, totally. And you've got, you know, real life stakes. You know, I've got a wife and a kid and a rent, like, you know, and that I was making good money on Broadway. And then that show died in a freaking hot second, even after like year. I mean, we literally spent years developing that thing. We would come back to it every so often and get together for a few weeks and work on it. And, or we would send in ideas, you know, stuff like that. And it's just brutal. You know, you think you've gotten there, and then it's like, nope, never mind.
Crushed.
Yeah, totally crushed. It's brutal.
Yeah.
But you just have to, you know, at the end of the day, like it's all stepping stones to the place you will get eventually if you stick around long enough, right? And that, I think, staying power is at least as important as talent, maybe more. Because after a certain point, you know, if you think about it in terms of me and the other dudes I always see at auditions that are like me, right? After a certain point, 99% of the roles we go in for, any one of us could do it and do it well, right? We're all professionals. We're all funny guys. We're all whatever, you know, we've been doing this for a long time. You know, and sometimes it's me, sometimes it's the other guy. Even when you finally do get there, you might book that pilot and that pilot may end up dying, but you worked with that director. And 2 years later, that director goes, oh, you know who would be great in this part? This guy. And then it finally pays off. And so it's just about like being one of those guys that's always in the room and willing to stick around long enough for it to work. Because not all of them die, right? Occasionally you get one that works.
Right.
So you kind of just have to be ready to like stick it out and be one of those dudes that always shows up, keeps showing up.
I think it was, I'm probably going to get this wrong, but I want to say Harrison Ford, but that actually doesn't sound right. But somebody like some huge A-list actor, I think when somebody said, what is it that made you successful or whatever, what's your key to success? He said, I just never went home. And that's true, man. I mean, that's totally true. Your competition literally shrinks. It just shrinks.
Every year, man.
Every year, it gets smaller and smaller as long as you can just stay in it. And I think about that for sure.
So when you do feel like you nailed one and then the rug gets pulled out from under you, that's what you got to remember. I mean, at the end of the day, you still made an important step, right? And then there's the business side of that, okay? When you book something like that, like when I've tested for a pilot before, the salary and all that is arranged before even testing. So that if they end up saying, okay, yes, you've booked the job, you already know what kind of money you're going to be making. So at least now, next time I book a pilot, or next time I go to test for a pilot, my agent can point to this history and say, well, he's been quoted at this level, so you need to do better than that. Mm-hmm. That's the industry standard. Or even though my Broadway show died a horrible, quick death, I was making this much per week. And so next time I'm up for a show, my agent can say he was making this much per week. You need to do better than that. And that's how the business side, you know, there are ups is what I'm saying. There are silver linings, even when something like that does happen, of course. It's all many steps. It might not be the step you hoped it would be, but it's still a step forward.
Right, right. Yeah, and you got to that level, which shows the casting directors and your agents and yourself that you've got skills, and there's definitely wins to be taken away from most things. Even if you get an absolutely crushing blow, like we were talking about, you can say to yourself, that is an experience that it actually has made me stronger. I have experienced a crushing blow and I made it through it. So next time I experience a crushing blow, I'll be a little bit more prepared for it.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I was bummed when getting the band back together closed, but I was also, I've been down that road before. I did High Fidelity. My first Broadway show ever was High Fidelity. Same deal. It was a great show. Super fun. Audiences loved it. Died almost immediately. So, you know, you just have to be ready for that. And there's not a great answer other than suck it up, move on. That's the biz.
And you also, it shows your, if you are one of the people who can not let that get to you, it separates you from the competition. Because I'll tell you what, man, there are a shitload of jaded actors out there. You hear that term all the time, but man, that is so true. Like ones that are,
of course,
angry at the business. You know what I mean?
Totally. Yep.
And if you can
very angry
stay lighthearted about it,
that will be one of the most important skills you can develop.
I agree.
Which is very much like the I think we talked about this last time, and I'll bring it around to auditioning since I know you wanted to talk about that. It's very much the same feeling as I try to take to auditions, right? Care less. Stop caring so goddamn hard about it, and you're more likely to book it.
Yeah.
Right? Because if you can go in there in the audition room and not be the 834th actor who's walked in there practically shaking with anticipation and desire for this job and be the one guy that's like, yeah, whatever. All right, let's do the scene. Boom. Cool. Good. Great. All right, later. You know, that's who they want to work with. They want somebody that's like going to be able to take it easy. It doesn't have to be such a big deal. And I think there's another like creative level of like, you're just going to perform better if you're not so like worked up and in your head and stressing about the job and all that shit. Right. Uh-huh. So just stop caring so hard. And that lets them know that you can be a professional. Like you're one of the guys that is going to stick this out. You book me on this. Great. You don't book me on this. That's okay. I'll see you on the next one. Our show did well. Great. Our show died. That's okay. See you on the next one. Uh-huh. You know, you're like, you gotta be able to take it easy, baby.
So, yeah, I want to talk to you about this. So on the last talk that we had a few years ago, we talked about this and you said that you grew up in a really chill place. You grew up like in the South, you grew up on the beach.
Yeah.
And you said that you were quick to realize that it was a major asset to be able to relax in auditions.
Oh, totally.
Would you say that you're just innately good at that, or are there things that you have learned, techniques that you've learned along the way in order to be able to make yourself relax? Because that's really, I mean, that I think that's half or more of the battle is just fucking being able to relax.
Totally. I mean, it's for me personally, I'd say it's probably a combo of both, mostly the former and then some of the latter, right? Like, I mean, as a dude in the world, I just take it pretty easy. And that's sort of always been a little bit of my MO, and that's cool. And I think that is advantageous to me in this business. But yeah, that's also not to say that I'm, you know, some superhuman who's immune to the anxiety of being an actor, right? Of course I go into certain jobs that I really fucking want to book this job, and I'm like, you know, I feel all that too. And you know, you could talk about doing breathing exercises or what you do in the audition room beforehand, you know, to make sure you're focused and all that kind of stuff helps. But I think at the end of the day, it's just like what's in your heart, and you have to be able to tell yourself, fucking let it go. Just let it go. Just go in there, do the best you can. Enjoy those few minutes you have of performing for somebody with somebody, and then be done with it. You know, just go and enjoy the thing for itself, and try not to worry so much about the destination that it may or may not provide you. Mm-hmm. Just enjoy those few minutes of doing that scene and being that character. You know, it'll help you be a better actor, I think, when you're not in your head like that. And it also just shows them that on the day, you're not going to be a pain in the ass. That, I think, is probably more important than anything.
Right.
Even if you have to fucking fake it. Let's talk about that. Even if you, as an actor, are good enough to go in there and just pretend like you don't give a shit, that, I think, is going to help you more than anything. because you're going to be like one of the few people that goes in the room like, yeah, what's up? Yeah, let's do this thing. All right, great. Boom. See you later. Because they, what they really want is, yes, somebody that's talented and brings something interesting to the role and can handle the material and all that. Yes. But like I said, at the end of the day, if you're one of the guys that has the staying power and you've been around for a while, any one of us could do it. So then what separates you is the dude who just, they know on the day is going to just do the job and not cause them any other fucking problems because they've got 137 other things to worry about.
Yeah.
That speaks powerfully to them.
The longer I'm in this business and like the more people I talk to and the more experience I get, the more I believe that that is just fact.
Totally. Totally, man.
That is the thing. I mean, that is like that is the big thing. It's who can be, yes, you have to have the skills. If you're a shitty actor and you go in and you're cool and you don't care, you're probably not going to get the job.
Right.
But if you're a really good actor and you go in there like really nervous and really like you tiptoe in and you're really like scared and it looks like you're scared, the person who goes in and it's like pretty good, but it's just like cool and like, yeah, this person's not going to be a pain in the ass. That's likely going to be the person who books it.
Totally. I
heard that from all the casting directors and all the directors
totally.
I talk to. That's fucking
and don't
hard.
Be a totally. It's hard to do because of course it means a hell of a lot to you. It's the most important 5 minutes of your day, but you have to consider the perspective of the other people in the room. And they're having that same 5 minutes all goddamn day long with you and 800 other actors. Right. Mm-hmm. So you got to meet them in the middle and be like, okay, I know I'm just another person on your long list of actors auditioning for this role. So let's just be chill about it. And the other thing is don't be a kiss ass. I think that never works out in the end for anybody. People come in and I feel like a lot of actors feel the need to like be overly nice or sort of like kiss up to the casting, the director, whoever, producers, you know, just be cool, baby. That's all they want. They don't need you to go in and kiss their ass about it. They just need to say that you can do the job and do it without causing a problem.
Absolutely. So do you like auditioning, Jay?
Yeah, I do actually. I don't know. Part of me, I like the challenge of it, I guess, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, what do you got? Come on. You know, like, I think I like that. I mean, I guess that speaks to being an actor in general, but yeah, I do actually.
We also talked on the last one about the fact that we both agree that this industry appeals to people who like gambling. And in a way, an audition is a big gamble. It's a gamble.
100%, dude. 100%. So many of my actor buddies are so deep into poker, and there's totally a reason. I mean, it is, you know, you do have to be a person that wants to fight against the odds and win despite that, right?
Right.
Because the odds are you're not going to make it.
Right.
Or at least that you're not going to make it in the way you want to. You're not going to walk away, you know, a bazillionaire Uber star, right? Like, you know, and there's a lot of versions of making it. And that's one thing you learn in this business. If you stick around, like if you're making a living and not having to wait tables, you're making it. You're doing freaking better than 99% of other people trying to do this. You know, yeah, you got to be one of those people that wants to play against the odds.
Right. One thing that I want to talk to you on just like a personal level, this is something that I've been dealing with, struggling with in this industry recently. I've always dealt with this. I've always felt this way. I get a lot of my like calmness in auditioning from preparation, from like a lot of preparation. And I have turned down auditions because I don't have enough time. Like, let's say I get an audition for something and it's like later that day, but I'm like swamped with a bunch of other shit that I'm doing that day. And I literally just don't have time. I don't feel like I have time to prepare enough to do as good as I want to do. And I think most people, and maybe I'm wrong, but, and I want to hear what you think. I think most actors would say that's not the right way to think about it. You should just go in and just do your damn best and who gives a shit.
Right.
But that's something that I struggle with a lot. And I want to hear your thoughts on that.
I am definitely one of those people that thinks that's not the right thing to do. First of all, because unless you're going in for Shakespeare, it's not likely that you're going to be given an audition that's so fucking impossible to memorize. Like, if you didn't have, if you go to the office and spend 15 minutes looking at it and then go in the room and do it. What are you ever auditioning for that's like so fucking complicated in terms of the words and on the page, right? Like, unless it's, you know, like, you know, unless it's fucking Shakespeare, you know, 99% of the auditions I go on are like TV stuff and, you know, or even theater stuff. It's just, you know, people talking like people talk, right? And if you don't do the words exactly the way they're written on the page, who gives a shit? Better to go in there and make a good impression. And even if it's not the right impression, you're one of the guys that showed up, and you're always one of the guys that shows up. The second thought is, like, for me, and you know what, this, I think this is different for different actors. For me, I don't prepare that much, and I'm a little better on the fly. Like, I'd rather have a sense of the scene, and, you know, not to say that I'm not more or less off book. I usually am when I go in. But again, it's because it's not like I'm going in for fucking something super complicated. Mm-hmm. I'd rather not get, because again, I think you get too stuck in your head, and you if you over prepare, you're going to want to do the scene exactly this way, the way you prepared it 120 times. Then when you're sitting there in the room, the director goes, "Okay, that's great. Now I want to try it a different way." You're going, but I wanted to do it this way. My brain only wants to do it this way. I prepared it this way. This is the way I have to do this.
Yeah,
totally. So if you can kind of go in, give it your own sort of more off the cuff flair, and then if they want to see something different, then you can do that a little easier. I think you're more open to receiving their direction. And I think over preparation can get you stuck. Some people, of course, some actors really, you know, need or want to do that preparation, and it makes them feel comfortable, and that's cool. But then I think the skill you have to work on after that is being ready to change what you've done on a dime.
Yeah, which I think I have. I think I'm pretty good at that. I mean, I understand that a lot of people fall into the trap of, like, I mean, definitely what you don't want to do is prepare within like an inch of your life this one specific way to do it, and then they tell you to change it, and you're fucked.
Right.
But yeah, man, I know. I mean, I wish I could just be. I have the luxury in a way, in a weird way, of I'm in Chicago and I just don't have that many auditions. But if I was in like New York or LA, where I hear about people going on like 3 auditions a day, I literally think like I could not do that the way that I am. I've handcuffed myself, right, with this need for a lot of preparation. So
I specifically don't look at it until I get there. If it's anything like commercials or VO, any of that shit, I don't look at it until I get there.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No, every time. Even if they send me a script, I don't look at it. I'll do it when I get there. Even if it's like something like, you know, Law and Order type shit, like I'll look at it a little bit, but like, I just don't worry about it too hard. Especially with TV stuff. And this could be Law and Order or commercial, you know, a lot of stuff. I want to do it once. And you always want to sort of like give that little flair of yourself, you know, bring that flavor that you have to the thing, you know, maybe you improv a line or two in there and, you know, give them a little something extra. But then always be ready to do that second take where you don't do fucking anything, especially for stuff like all the doctor, lawyer, cop shows. The most important thing about booking all those shows is don't fucking do anything. Just don't do anything. Just say the words, right? Because, like, yeah, I've done a couple episodes of FBI, you know, the new Law and Order show, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm a tech nerd at the FBI, you know, I'm a computer guy, right? The audience knows what that is. I don't need to like be like, I'm the tech guy. Let me introduce myself, you know. The second they see like a chubby bearded dude with glasses in a room at the FBI with a bunch of computers around, they know exactly what my character is. So I don't need to do anything to express that. Just let the words do the work for you, spit them out simply, calmly, and be done. And that's what fucking books it, because you don't have to like work so hard on that kind of shit. And I think that's true for 9 out of 10 TV auditions. I always want to go in and give my little like flair and give them, show them like what I can do, but they almost always go, okay, let's do another version. And you know, kind of pull it back a little. And then I do.
Interesting.
And then they can see, oh, okay. So he can just pull it back and play it straight.
Interesting. So you give like your, you give the, you always do the first take as your like take on the role.
Yeah.
A little bit extra. And then the next take, you're like, drop it all. Do it.
Yeah. Just spit it out. Probably,
yeah.
Stop thinking and spit it out.
Oh man. That's interesting.
I mean, it almost, I think it's great to sort of weave in that second take anyway. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Then they've got two nice takes of you, right?
Sure.
And then you show them that you got a little fuego, little yeah. something to fire it up.
Sure.
But if they want to play it, downplay it, you can do that too.
Yeah. I've been doing this podcast since 2015. And when I started, I hadn't booked any TV whatsoever. And the first episode was with this acting coach and author, theater professor dude. And he coached me through one of my first co-star auditions that I ended up going out to book. It was a very small role. It was just a paramedic role, right? I had four sentences or something like that.
Right.
And it was the first time after talking to him that I understood that it was really about, when it comes to those small roles, especially the co-stars and with guest stars, you do a little bit more or whatever. But when it comes to small roles, it's almost a competition of who can do the least.
100%, dude. 100%. And I think that continues up to the other roles too, like in the guest stars and the recurs. Like it's exactly what I did for FBI, and that's how I booked it, right? I went in, I gave it a little something. The director enjoyed it, loved it. Like he straight up told me, I was like, he liked it a lot. And then, but let's do a version where you kind of play it. And I was like, great, I did it. Because, and I think here's why this happens. The dudes and the ladies sitting in the room writing these scripts, that's one thing. The actual production of the thing is another, right? So the writers are trying to write something cool. So every time I see a character description that says like, he's a kind of a weird, you know, science nerd, maybe on the spectrum, or you know, like he's a, you know, they try to give the character some sort of like thing. They never fucking mean it. They never mean it. The writer means it. But when you get in the room, the directors and the producers are like, just spit it out. You know, just do it. Don't give it.
It's too much. Right. It's too much character. It's too much character for
TV. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, totally.
I've talked about this in the past, and I've realized from the few times that I've been on TV that it's incredible how little the series regulars do. I mean, it's shocking sometimes.
Right.
Like, I don't remember who I was talking to, but I was like the volume and the facial expressions is so minimal. I can't express it. And I think that everyone listening to this, you won't be able to understand it until you see it. It's totally. So minimal.
Do nothing. Just do nothing. That's the mantra to book TV. Don't do anything. Don't do shit.
Amazing.
Don't prepare. When you get there, don't do anything.
Yeah.
Don't care.
Don't care.
Don't do anything.
Right. Don't kiss ass.
Yeah. Basically fight every instinct you have as a human.
Oh my God. Unbelievable. So I watched your reel, and I suggest that everyone go and watch Jay's reel, jayclites.com. Dude, that scene in vinyl that you have on your reel, holy shit.
Oh, so
dude.
Much fun, man.
I mean,
God,
talk about a
dream. Speaking of like one of those things that I, you know, that show, I was over the moon to book it. I'm still over the moon that I got to work on it just because I'm a rock and roller, and just to have been a part of that, like, freaking makes my heart explode into a million tiny guitars. But like we were talking about earlier, like thinking like, all right, I've hit one that's like, this is gonna really help take me to the next level. Nope, that show fucking died too.
Yeah.
one season and it was done.
So I want to ask you this, like just on an industry technical level. When I had that pilot that I was talking about, everybody from like the makeup artists to like the other actors, everybody was like, this one's a done deal. Like this one's going, this one's for sure getting picked up. I heard so-and-so talking and like, for sure. Like
no.
This. And then it was like, nope, absolutely not. I was wondering like, how did it happen where you heard that vinyl was not going to continue And was it the same sort of a thing?
It didn't. Nobody told my ass. I heard about it when you did.
Really?
It was like, oh yeah, it's very unceremonial. It's just done. Forget it. It's like, there was never any like, dear Jay, so sorry, but just to let you know, nobody, you know, if you're a serious regular, yeah, they're going to let you know. But, you know, for even a guy like me who was a recurring character, like, and I think I was in, like, what was it, 7 out of 10 episodes or 6 out of 10, whatever it was. Like, so I was around in that show. I found out when the rest of the world did.
Did you hear talk that it was going to be picked up, that it was going to continue, or that it wasn't going to continue? Was there rumors?
It was going to continue. They actually, like, wrote the checks to the principals, like, for the second season. Like, it was happening. And then they decided after that to put it down.
Fuck.
Yeah. Brutal. I was like, yes, season two. And, you know, like, dude, Scorsese, you fucking Mick Jagger, you know, like, you know, Bobby is so great. He's such a freaking awesome actor.
Dude.
I mean, the whole cast. Ray Romano, one of the funniest human beings I've ever been in a room with. Let alone as an actor. I just mean as a dude in the world. That guy cracks me up. You know, I mean, I could go on. The whole cast, everybody was just fantastic. And I thought, you know, I thought there was a 0% chance that the show wasn't going to do really, really well and be on for several seasons. And nope.
Man, listen up, actors. Like, this is what you have to look forward to.
Totally. Even when you made it, you didn't. And, but you know what, like, I have to, you know, the other side of that is, like, just for the sake of not being all doom and gloom, right? Like, I still got to be a part of that. And that is a really cool little piece of rock and roll / cinematic history. And I got to be a meaningful little part of it and put a satanic curse on Bobby. And that was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm thrilled to have done it. And I'm glad that I got to be there and just had my little mark on the world for that. Even if it didn't last the way I wanted it to last, you got to appreciate it anyhow.
Yeah. And
same,
you know,
thing
what
with
else?
All the shows we were talking about, you know, like the show died, but I loved it anyway.
Absolutely. And less, you know, less gloriously, on the less glorious side of it, you got paid. Sure, you made good money. You'll continue to get residuals for that season, and you got a hell of a scene, you know, for your reel.
Totally.
And the cred. You get the credits, and you get the reputation from the people.
Yep.
So there's a lot that, I mean, yeah, it would have been great.
You made good with the casting directors on that job. The directors, of course, on TV, you're working, you know, for many different directors. So I work with a bunch of different directors already I've seen on other things, you know, so it's great, you know. There's still a lot of good that comes out of it, even if it doesn't play out the way you wanted it to.
Yeah. All right, Jay, I'm not going to keep you too much longer. I have two more questions for you. One is, do you feel like you know when you're going to book a role after a callback?
No. Very rarely. Very rarely. I mean, I was just in a waiting room today for a VO, and another actor was joking about how it's always when you feel like you nailed it, you don't hear a damn thing. And when you feel like, oh God, that wasn't so great, you end up booking it. That is so very true. And also not true. Like, sometimes I go, I don't know, I kind of feel like I rocked that, but I don't know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And most auditions I go on, I feel like I do pretty well. And that's not because I'm some amazing fucking gifted actor or some shit. That's just because, like, look, I'm going in for stuff that I'm right for. So it's not like I'm, you know, nobody's asking me to go in for King Lear, and I don't fucking want it anyway. So,
yeah.
So, like, you know, most of the time I go in, it goes pretty well. And then, I don't know, I book it or I don't. I feel like I have no fucking idea. I'll never know.
Right.
There are times, of course, when you feel like, wow, that went really well. And especially if it's a callback situation, you know, and the director, maybe the producers say something, you know, there are times when you feel like, all right, I got a real shot at that one. But even then, sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Sometimes you get more of a hint in a callback.
Yeah. sometimes. But I've also gotten what I thought was a hint and then never heard anything about it.
For sure. I've also absolutely bombed callbacks where I walked out and I was like, I don't fucking want to act anymore. And then I book it.
Yep. 100%. You just don't know, which is all the more reason yet again to stop fucking caring. You make yourself insane trying to like wonder after every audition you ever go on, am I going to book that? Did I do as good a job as I could? Blah, blah, blah. Fuck it. Enjoy what you're doing. Enjoy the few minutes you have to do the thing of being an actor. Have fun, and then let it go.
All right, last question, Jay.
Hit me.
Haven't talked to you.
Did I like tell you that? Did we talk about the High Fidelity audition last time?
No.
So High Fidelity was my first Broadway show. This is just a good example of like stop caring so much, right? I went in the first time for the Jack Black role in the movie, right? Went well, I thought. It was just me and a casting assistant. Didn't hear anything for like months. I get a call to come back in for an ensemble role. Great. I go in, I do the ensemble, I get a call back. Now I'm going to call back for the ensemble role, and you know the director's there, the choreographer, all the producers, you know, 40 people are behind the table. And it goes well. And he goes, do you know the Barry song? Have you read for that? And that's you know, Jack Black role. And I was like, oh, yeah. No, I read for it a while back. I know that. So they asked me to do the scenes and the song for that character. And, you know, I hadn't really prepared because I didn't think I was going to be reading that. I'd been preparing for the other role, of course, right? So they give me the sides. I have a few minutes to look at them. I go back in. And it's the scene in the film, I'm sure you remember, where the guy comes in to the record store looking for a Yanni cassette. And of course, it's like, fuck you and your Yanni, like, get out of here with that. So I sat down, and throughout the entire scene, I never once looked up. I just picked my nose like this. I just literally sat there and picked my nose and didn't look up for the entire scene. At one point, I kind of like had the booger stuck on my hand. And I just kept picking my nose and just saying the lines like this, looking down, picking my nose, not looking up at the Yanni guy. That's what booked me the job. Because Wow. They couldn't believe that somebody would like be so irreverent,
right?
You know, with their precious Broadway. And that's what, you know, a rock show, of course, you need that kind of vibe. But I just was like, fuck it. I'm going to do something kind of crazy. And it worked, you know, like if I'd thought about that, you know, if I'd cared too much, I probably would have gone, nah, dude, you're pushing the envelope there. That's a little questionable. But I literally picked my nose through the whole scene. I didn't think about it beforehand. I was like, oh, I'm going to pick my nose. That's it, man. It's so dumb, but you know, I think it works.
What a weird business.
Yeah, truly.
All right. So my last question for you is, when it comes to like your acting ability, is there anything that you can mention that you've learned since we last talked? So in like the last couple of years, like, is there anything that you could like, you know, put into words like that you've learned? Does that make any sense? Like breakthroughs?
Totally.
And, like,
can you hear me all right? My headphones died.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's okay?
Yep.
Okay. Is there anything I've learned? You know what? I'll say this. Back in the day, before I, you know, sort of whatever, had some of the credits that I have now, it was very important to be making my own stuff, like we were talking about earlier with Future Folk, right? There was a period for a bunch of years where I didn't do that as much because I had gained some meaningful credits on Broadway and TV or whatever, and was doing well in commercials and yada yada. And lately, commercials have really like dropped off the deep end. That's a whole other thing we could discuss and why that's happening. There's a real shift in the business. Commercial work is not what it used to be. So suddenly I'm at a new point of needing to believe my own bullshit and be like, oh man, you can't rest on your laurels, dude. You do really need to make your own thing happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because I kind of got comfortable for a while. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's been, you know, I haven't had to do day jobs for a long time now. Mostly because in between TV and theater stuff, I've been able to do enough commercial work that things are cool. That's still kind of true, but it's not true like it used to be. There's just not as much commercial work out there because of the way the industry is changing. And so I'm at a new point of trying to do that. So I've taken on a project. I'll tell you about it next time we talk because it's still sort of in the works, right? I'm trying to produce a thing and act in it as well. I'm sort of at a new level of trying to, and it's a bigger push than anything I've done before in terms of the scope of the project. So I don't know if that's necessarily a new thing I've learned, but I've been reminded of a thing I used to really have to do that I kind of let go for a while because I was resting on my laurels. So I guess what I'm saying is don't get comfortable even when you think you've been doing well.
Yeah.
Even when you have been doing well, don't get too cozy because you will. I mean, I don't care who you are. There will be down points. And so I'm really trying to find a way to push forward some of my own stuff right now to make up for that sort of change in the business.
I was just thinking about this yesterday. I was on, like I said, I was on this commercial set and I've done like a lot for this particular production company and it's been going for like years. And, I was thinking about literally yesterday, I was like, because it's become part of my income. It's become like a normal part of my income. And then one day it is just going to end. They are going to, that client is going to go with a different production company. They're going to take a hard left turn. They're going to start doing totally different commercials and that will just be gone.
Yep.
And exactly, I will, dude. I got to make sure that I am like prepared for that because I have gotten used to making that money from that.
There's no rest for the weary, baby. You got to keep pushing. I forgot that for a while and I'm now going like, dude, you got to get off your ass and make it happen.
What's the change? Sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's exactly I want to hear what you say. I had a very interesting conversation with another actor yesterday. Brandon Williams, who also did get the band back together actually, but I've known him for years before that from commercial stuff. He's done loads and loads of commercials over the years. And he was saying how he was having a conversation with this person he met at a party who was a creative director at an ad agency who said, well, my title is creative director, but I don't actually do anything creative. I just acquire profiles. And what that means is buying profiles from people like Facebook and Google and then doing super targeted ads via, you know, little ads that pop up in Facebook or email ads or little banners that come across your Instagram, you know, all that kind of shit, right? Digital, super targeted digital media advertising. Whereas, you know, a few years ago, if McDonald's was doing a new ad campaign and they had $1 million to spend, they would spend $1 million on content, whether it was TV ads or print ads or even internet ads, whatever it was, but all shit that involved an actor at least, right? Or a bunch of actors. Whereas now they're going to take half of that $1 million and spend it on content, take the other half and spend it on buying profiles so that they can send super targeted little ads. And these are mostly, you know, just texts over a screen with some music maybe, you know, like it's not shit that they need actors for. I think that is having a big impact on the commercial side of this business. I'm not sure it's ever going to go back to the way it was.
Right.
Maybe. I don't know. But there's also the union, non-union fight that's happening. I just got the email from SAG about the meeting coming up, and they're trying to make all commercials union. I hope they will. I think they should. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that will be a meaningful step, but I don't know that it's going to turn it all around either. I think the business is changing, and there's just not going to be as much commercial work as there used to be.
Well, at least there's more like TV and shit with like all like Netflix and all those. Everyone's making
right. That's the trade-off.
Content there. Yeah.
Yeah. There's so much more fun stuff to do in terms of series, especially and film, like between all those streaming services, there's a hell of a lot more than there used to be. So life changes, the world changes, the biz changes.
Jay, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you, man. I really, your episode, like I said, I'm not kissing your ass. Your episode was downloaded like as many times as the most downloaded episode.
Really?
No offense. Like I really enjoyed the episode and I really enjoyed talking to you, but I didn't know why. I never, I still don't know why.
Yeah. I love it, dude. I'm glad people have responded well, man. That's awesome.
It blew all the other ones out of the water when this was, you know, this was in 2016 and it blew them all away.
I hope this episode
we'll
blows
see
that one away even.
Hey, we will see. Yeah. I will let you know, man.
I'm reaching for new heights, baby.
You're setting the bar. Wow.
Yeah.
All right, man. I really appreciate your time, and I think this is going to be the next one that's going to come out. So probably in like sometime Lee. Next week.
Lee.
Oh, dude.
Is there something you forgot?
Oh.
I dedicate this to Lee and to all his listeners.
Vaya con Dios.
Usted es de un otro mundo, pero usted es como la luna del fondo. Ay, mi luna extranjera, porque su lenguaje es el del amor. Aprendí español hace 5 minutos. Extranjera, ay mi luna, extranjera, ay mi luna. Extra.
Oh no.